What's a rip?
A rip, commission. That's why we work here.
Any huge rips?
No, I still don't know how it works.
But you and me, the brokers, we're taking home cold hard cash via commission.
Right.
No matter whether our clients make money or lose money, the Duke and Duke get the commissions.
The only thing we don't know is your fee.
My fee is the free market. And you're part of it.
You are listening to Fees Always Wins, a financial podcast.
An excerpt from a 2015 January 8th edition of the New York Times indicated married people tend to be happier, but they debate whether that's because marriage causes happiness or simply because happier people are more likely to get married. The new paper, published by the National Bureau of Economic Research, controlled for pre-marriage happiness levels. It concluded that being married makes people happier and more satisfied with their lives than those who remain single, particularly during the most stressful periods like midlife crisis. A quarter of today's young adults will have never married by 2030, which would be the highest share in modern history. According to the Pew Research Center, yet both remaining unmarried and divorcing are more common among the less educated, lower-income people. Educated, high-income people still marry at higher rates and are less likely to get divorced. Those whose lives are more difficult could benefit the most from marriage, according to the economist who wrote the new paper. John Helwell of the Vancouver School of Economics and Sean Grover of the Canadian Department of Finance state, "Marriage may be the most important when there is stress in life and when things are going wrong," Mr. Grover said. It is with that in mind, Fees Always Wins presents an episode on the finance of marriage. The wedding is important, but today we talk about how to prepare for everything after that. I'm Chris, joined by the scion of the Delta, the thrilla and the dilla, the people's champ, Ello. Leave us a message, like us on Facebook, rate us on iTunes. This is an audible journal about our journey to financial enlightenment, starting with a budget.
Okay, Chris, this topic is near and dear to me because, as our listeners know, I'm getting married in October. I know typically we go through financial templates, financial definitions, and we give you guys options about saving, investing, and taking care of your money. Well, a key aspect for me, as well as other people out there, is marriage. Everyone thinks of Say Yes to the Dress. Everybody thinks about Meghan Markle and, you know, marrying into the British family, into royalty. But what about real life things and terms that we may not always think about? We're going to discuss some things regarding marriage, regarding budgeting, finances, student loans. There's so many things to consider that sometimes we may overlook because we're more concerned with the perfect wedding, making sure we have the most beautiful ring in the world, thinking about things that on the surface level make sense, but to have a successful marriage, a big part is finances. And I would imagine having a nice budget and proper communication can help keep the marriage strong. So we're going to go over some key topics just to make sure you guys are having all the information you can, not just from your 401k, not just from your stocks, but in regards to having a well-rounded idea of what it takes for every avenue of your life, from bank accounts to all of the things that we think about or sometimes may overlook. So, Chris, I thank you for this being a topic that we can explore and go into. I also thank you for being the brother from another, the philosopher of all stones, and the guy that's made this whole process come to life. So thank you, Chris.
This is what we do, Audible Journal.
All right, so one of the main things I wanted to talk about was budgeting. I've heard before people talk about, in regards to budgeting, you need to know in a relationship who's the saver and who's the spender. So for me, this is something I really wanted to talk about because there's typically one or the other. If you have both of the same, it may make things tricky because it's hard to delve into who's who if you're both doing the exact same thing, but that's where communication takes a big key. Money issues are so troublesome that people who say they're experiencing stress in their relationship cite finances as their number one reason. Easily beating out the second place contender, annoying habits. According to a study by SunTrust, money issues are responsible for 22% of all divorces, making it the third leading cause, according to the Institute for Divorce Financial Analysis. So basically what we're saying is money, the way you handle money, the way that you communicate money, and the way you guys decide to put your finances in front of each other play an important role, not only in your happiness, but in your marriage. And as you heard before, 22% of people are divorced because of finances. So that plays a key role. One thing to do is to track your budget. Many bank accounts will do it for you. For example, household finances. Let's say we're talking about joint account versus separate accounts. Chris, I know this is something that you wanted to go into greater detail about, but it's just trying to give people options and discuss things in regards to what they can do with their money and not necessarily having to go a traditional route, but doing what works best for them and having the knowledge to know the difference.
And I think one thing before we continue is this is just as we're analyzing this, because the person who knows their spouse the best is going to be you. Don't let what we're saying be the deciding factor. I know I'm overestimating what any influence we could have, but I just want to state the indicator that you know who your spouse is and what really works in your relationship. The joint account versus the separate account is probably one of those first real thresholds that you cross after you get married, as it's a decision of how you're going to organize the overall finances. If it's joint, you should know a threshold. In my opinion, a pack of gum shouldn't be something that you have to let your spouse know about. A $50 bottle of bourbon or a $100 money transfer to a sibling, maybe that's something that should be discussed. We pretty much follow a combo system right before marriage. We were talking about future plans. And one way you could look at it as combo. We always agree to put a minimum of 50% of our paycheck towards the joint account, assuming we're both working, because with our income at that time, that would give us enough to pay all the bills and start saving for things like a house. Also, psychologically, contributing 50%, the majority of our money towards the marriage, feels cooperative. It's a strong front versus trying to save on our own bills. There's also the option of filing separate, of just keeping your accounts alone with whatever you had before you walked in the marriage. But if you're really having open communication, naturally, women aren't going to get compensated the same way that men are, because sexism is real and that glass ceiling exists, that even though you're significant other might have much more experience, might be better at their jobs, they might not get compensated in the same manner because they're punished for things, for having children, going on maternity leave, or just the assumption that they can't take a different role. So as a male, you're probably going to cross a threshold probably in your mid-30s, your late-30s, to where you'll start making more than your spouse if all things are equal. Despite what the job performance exists, and that's just what the data shows. So that's just a way we want to start this. But Ello, you wanted to talk more about bills and how that affects in our bills and taxes, which are kind of one and the same because you're paying somebody as a result. But
okay, so on a joint tax return, a married couple must report their combined income and deductions. You should note that you can file a joint return even if one spouse has no income or deductions. Also, keep in mind the standard deduction may be higher for joint filers, and you may qualify for a variety of tax benefits that would not otherwise apply. Joint filers must use the same tax year on their return, but each spouse is allowed to use different accounting methods. Both spouses must sign a joint return, though you may sign for your spouse with a note of exclamation if he or she is serving in a combat zone for the U.S. Armed Forces. It is important to remember that filing jointly means that you will both be held accountable for all information reported on the tax return. Furthermore, you can be held jointly liable for all the taxes, interest, and penalties incurred or income earned by your spouse. In a situation like that, you may want to consider filing for innocent spouse relief. For more information about the innocent spouse relief, please refer to IRS Publication 971. If one spouse brings tax problems from prior years into a new marriage, these previous issues should not affect their new spouse. Consequently, pre-existing tax problems should not affect the decision about whether to file jointly or separately. The spouse who doesn't have prior tax issues should look into, requesting injured spouse allocation. Let me read that over. The spouse who doesn't have prior tax issues should look into requesting injured spouse allocation. For more information about injured spouse allocation, please refer to IRS Form 8379 and its instructions. Also, you have the option to file separately. You can file jointly or you can file separately. If you're filing separately, sometimes it is in your advantage to file separate returns instead. This may be true if you think that your spouse is not honestly reporting their income or deductions. It can also apply if your spouse. It can also apply if your spouse is having too little federal income tax withheld from their paychecks, or he or she isn't making proper quarterly estimated tax returns. In certain instances, for example, if one spouse has high medical expenses or other deductions limited by adjusted gross income (AGI), filing separately can result in owning less tax. However, there are a number of special rules that come with married filing separately status, which tend to result in higher taxes for most people. Separate filers are often excluded from tax breaks that joint filers are eligible for, such as earned income credit, the credit for adoption expenses, and deductions for education expenses. Separate filers cannot claim a credit for child care costs. Separate filers also cannot claim a credit for child care costs unless their spouses are living apart, and they are limited to excluding up to $2,500 instead of $5,000 from the income under an employee's dependent care assistant program. If a couple elects to file separately, only one parent may claim their child as a dependent, even if both parents are equally contributing to the child support. Also, for separate filers, if one spouse itemizes their deductions, the other spouse cannot claim the standard deduction. There are currently 9 states with community property laws: Arizona, California, Idaho, Louisiana, Nevada, New Mexico, Texas, Washington, and Wisconsin. If you live in one of these states, you should choose to file separate returns. The community property laws of your state will govern how you calculate your income on your federal income tax return. Note that you will have to determine your community income as well as your separate income. For more information, please refer to the IRS Publication 555 Community Property. Another thing I wanted to discuss is student loans, because filing jointly versus filing separately, a lot of people get uncomfortable when it comes to student loans because of the severity of debt that they may have. They may be embarrassed. They may not necessarily want to go into the details or the specifics of it. However, if you're marrying someone or you're becoming one, technically your debt is their debt and vice versa. So if you have a accumulation of student loan debt, that's something you want to have a conversation with, as uncomfortable as it may be. Because if your income taxes are being affected by what's owed in your student loans, your spouse may be affected by that as well, depending on how you choose to file your taxes. But you would want to have that conversation prior to then trying to hide it, and then it becomes an issue when the paperwork is filled and all of a sudden money's being taken away. when you're considering getting married, you have to have conversations about debt. You have to have conversations about credit scores, because as much as we may not want to get into those deep waters that may make us uncomfortable, you have to have those conversations, not only to be transparent, but you want to give your other, your significant other a chance to know what's going on, react to it, and get an honest dialogue as far as options that you guys can do moving forward to correct the issues.
And in regards to establishing savings, which are also an aspect of that, you really can't decide what money you could put aside until you identify what debt might exist as part of a marriage and getting into a relationship. Not only is a marriage a commitment to your partner, it's also a contract with the government that now they could consider you as one. So everything the other person does, you can't take it as a criticism or an attack. It's part of building that relationship and a strong bond going forward on solid financial footings. And but there are a couple of ways to save. And I know Ella wanted to get into that as well.
So when it comes to saving, one big thing that a lot of people talk about is 401k. A key component is to max out your contributions to your 401k. Chris and I actually had this conversation recently because my current job, that was a big thing we were talking about, maxing out your 401k, and that way you let it build over time. Total 401k contribution limit. Employee contributions combined with any employee contributions cannot be greater than the individual's income from the business for the year, up to a maximum of $55,000 for 2018. The annual dollar limit may be adjusted by the IRS for changes in cost of living. If you make $50,000 a year and can live off of 25 a year, consider putting as much money in your retirement accounts as possible. Whatever you don't contribute will be taxed by the IRS. So that's why you want to make sure you're doing what you can to save your money. If you're living off of 50, but you can possibly live off of 25, and you're setting yourself up for success in the future, it's something to consider. Although I know a lot of people get uncomfortable with the idea of putting that much money away, but it's not necessarily thinking about a short-term play, but if you think about the long-term benefits of that strategy, you'll reap the rewards later in life. So that's something to consider. Although it's not saying that you have to do it, it's an option for you regarding something that may be helpful with having that nest egg later in life. Experts believe it is much easier to access your money in a savings account as opposed to a certificate of deposit or a CD or money market account. You can transfer funds to another account, use them for bill payments, and even make transfers to credit or debit cards. If it's an online account, you may have 24/7 access to your funds. However, there's often a transaction limit on how many withdrawals you can have within a given period. Although ATM withdrawals and transactions in person generally don't count toward the overall limit. Even though you have easy access, there's typically a 6 transaction limit per month. This transaction limit is a Regulation D rule put in place to encourage people to save their money. So in fact, it's meant to help you in the long run. Whether you are a bachelorette, or married, you generally want to have accessible savings that reflects 3 to 6 months of expenses. Rent, car payment bills, miscellaneous things you have to include, which we call the Up Fund for anybody that watched Up, the cartoon Up. They put the money in the jar, but every time they could never take their trip because stuff kept randomly happening. We call it the Up Fund. In the case of an emergency, you would cut ancillary expenses in the actual emergency. If you can save money, do it. Biggest thing is this. You want to set yourself up for success. We said before, divorces, 22% of divorces are based on finances. And one thing that I want to make sure I'm doing on my end, since I am getting married, is I want to set myself and my future wife up and our future kids up for success. We read an article a couple of weeks back talking about how in the upcoming years, minorities, especially Black people, are projected to not be able to maintain their finances or basically are going to go broke over time. And that's something that stuck with me even to today. So the options that we have, and if you're making $50,000, let's say you're not doing $25,000, but you're doing what you can, as much as you feel comfortable with doing to set yourself up for success. It's just doing everything you can and taking all the advantages that are available to you versus being comfortable in the moment. And when you get older, you don't have anything left that you can use. Chris, I know we want to talk about insurance as well, because that's another thing that goes into account when you're getting married. I know you want to break that down as well.
Insurance, your liabilities are going to be one of the biggest needs in a marriage, as that could often be one of the biggest risk, or what we call an insurance and exposure. We did have an episode specifically on auto insurance, and in the next set of series, we will probably have an episode about home insurance as well. But a couple of things is particular is I know when before I got married, I thought that there was this magical number that you get 24 or 25 and your insurance rate will drop. Part of it, I wasn't a very good driver. Why it didn't drop, but then I talked to other friends and theirs didn't drop either. Because that was back in the day where there was really only 6 to 12 segmentations of identifying features that they could rate you on. Now that it's digital, there's a lot of carriers that have 78 separate ways that they judge you, your driving, and your ability to drive, and they provide a rate. One of the biggest factors in there is relationship status. Happily marriage also seems to have a positive impact on auto insurance rates. The fact is, married couples are less likely to get into car accidents. Getting married, therefore, generally has a positive effect on your car insurance rates. Most auto insurance carriers offer a discount to married drivers. In addition to not only getting a discount for married drivers, you also get a discount for having a multi-car policy, that anytime you add a second car to your policy, it will be less to add that separate car than to go get a whole separate policy by itself for it. While home insurers might use marital status as a factor in determining your rate, or they might just offer you a flat discount, for example, 5% off of the premium. When you get married, it's worth it to call and ask for a better deal once you're hitched. When you have children or a third person in the household, the rate will often increase due to an increase in liability risk. It's not that your toddler resident children are necessarily a liability risk. Their toddler friends that come over can be an increased liability. In addition to grade school children, one of the most common claims in a state like California to home insurance are the result of injury from fights between children. And growing up when at my day, man, that makes me sound super old. I'm only 35. But growing up my day, it was unfathomable that kids getting in the fight at school would lead to parents suing them. Occasionally, you heard that in TV that my parents are going to sue you and take everything you have. What they were referencing was generally home insurance. So that typically happens in more affluent areas where they know the other parent is insured or has an umbrella or has some type of coverage to protect liability. Going forward, one of the highest claims filed is the result of cyberbullying. Your normal policy will not cover that because there is an identifiable intent to cyberbullying. Therefore, it's not accidental or sudden as a loss, and therefore there's no coverage. Certain carriers like Chubb, that coverage can be purchased for a couple hundred extra dollars a year, and they'll provide lawyers in case that type of situation occurs. Based on the days and the news that you often hear, it sounds like a risk. Everybody thinks their child is great, but if you've ever grew up in school, you realize most of those children are bad. But when you get married, what you want to call your insurance company, whether they're your home insurer, your auto insurer, or your life insurer or health insurer, is ask them about open enrollment due to life-changing events, where there's not many ways that they'll re-rate it in the middle of the term, except for that purpose of a life-changing event. Health is one of the biggest ones, as there's usually an open enrollment period that was typically around the ACA time of November to December as of last year. That's one of the few times where you can get out of a contract or get into a health contract outside of that regular enrollment period. That your nuptials are a great time to revisit your health insurance plans. Marriage is one of the few qualifying life events to allow you to change your insurance plan or add a spouse. The other one being having a child, adopting a child, will also count as a life-changing event. If you miss that deadline, you'll have to wait until the next open enrollment period to make changes to your plan. Compare your current two separate insurance plans and calculate if it saves money to join your significant other's plan or maintain your own. Companies often pay a large share of their employees' insurance, sometimes making it less conducive to joining your spouse's plan. Example, I worked at a job where my insurance was $125 a month. My wife's was $100 a month at her job. But to add each other to our respective plans, it would have been an additional $160, even though we have the same carrier. As a result, we saved a minimum of $360 a year by remaining on our current plans. So it's something to consider as you're saving money and you're budgeting. That's one area you could find some flexibility for that extra expense money, as $360, that could go into your savings, your 3 to 6 month savings as part of that nest egg, or as Elo identified, the up fund. Life insurance is also an availability, as typically, you could get life insurance through your job that you want enough that covers your income, especially for your spouse. In that, in the case of the of an unforeseen circumstance and something happens to you, you want to make sure typically that your spouse has enough to survive 3 years without the income that you were bringing home. So if your salary is $30,000 a year, you should probably get an insurance plan of $90,000 a year, so you know that they have the ability to, whether that's helping to pay off the mortgage or pay some bills that you left remaining. That's going to be determined by your debt load as well as the debt that you accumulate together, and understanding how much liquidity your spouse is going to need if in that unforeseen event something happens to yourself and your spouse is left without you. But money issues are so troublesome that people who say they're experiencing stress in their relationship cite finances as the number one reason, easily beating out the second place contender, annoying habits. According to that study that Elo mentioned earlier by SunTrust, money issues are responsible for 22% of all divorces, making it the third leading cause, according to the Institute of Divorce and Financial Analysis. And there's always that number you hear that 50% of marriages end in divorces. Don't worry about that number, because if you think about it, it's, yes, that's marriages, but often people who get divorced once will get divorced additional times, and that counts as the marriage and goes towards that number. So it's actually much less of first-time marriages that have a divorce, because it's the person who gets divorced that often gets divorced again. Because if it's a financial concern and they haven't addressed it by the time they got remarried, then it will continue to remain a concern throughout that new relationship.
Yeah, Chris, just to touch on a couple of things, even regarding life insurance, because this was a conversation I had recently. And it's kind of surreal when you start discussing life insurance and you hear about how it's more expensive for the male to get life insurance than the female, because typically we don't live as long. And when you're in your 30s, it's like, ha, but you sit back and think about it like, huh, so you guys are expecting me to kick the bucket, huh? And based on that conversation, yes, you do have options for life insurance at your job, but if you decide to go out and get an additional policy, going through the process of getting blood work done and getting extensive work done so that they can have all your information available. It's eye-opening in the sense that you understand that your life and the value that you choose to place on your life is big business in a sense. So you really have to be careful of who you allow into that avenue in regards to who you do business with, but you also need to, if nothing else, it's an eye-opener to take better care of yourself and your body. Just going over the life insurance that you talked about before, big thing for me is money issues, because like you said before, different money issues can cause so many different issues within the marriage. We talked about before potentially writing out what your money goals are, because I feel like a big reason people have money issues, it's not just not knowing what to do with their money, but they're not having open and honest dialogue about what's going on. I feel like in some instances, not all, I can't speak for everyone, a big issue is not being transparent what's going on, trying to fix it on your own, or potentially making things worse by trying to do things on your own, making the hole deeper and deeper. If anything, this whole process has opened my eyes to the importance of open communication and really trying to work together for a common goal and not working against each other. And like you said before, it's okay to have a movie ticket here or there that you go to, but when it comes to the bigger things that you're putting your money into, those are things that I think both parties should know about. Not saying they have to know your every move, but at least have an idea of where the bills are being paid, where things are being addressed. It's kind of going off topic, but these are the type of things you want to discuss with the person that you're going to marry. You want to know how do they go about paying bills? I once had an experience with a person who the way that they paid their light bill was they waited to get the pink copy because the company wasn't going to cut their lights off until you got the pink copy, and that meant they had 10 more days to pay it. That may not be the best way to go about doing things. Hey, whatever works for you, but your spouse, you want to know how they feel about paying bills, how they feel about taking care of business. Is this something that takes priority, or is this something that they'll get to when they get to? All these things are things to think about, but sometimes when you're showing love, these are things you assume will work themselves out, but that's not always the case. It's always worth having that conversation. And like I said before, having a common goal or a common number that you both are trying to get to each month, like you were saying, Chris. If all else fails, there's nothing wrong with asking for help. Not only, like you said, with your family, but there are financial advisors. There are institutions out there that can help fortify a plan to look at the finances and see where money's going versus where it may should be going. So there are options and there are different ways that you can get help. Of course, I said before, having a dialogue with your spouse, but if that still isn't working and you're still having issues, it's okay to consider a financial advisor or coming up with a strategy or a plan and tracking it over time to see where it goes. The biggest thing regarding this particular episode, it's not, like you said before, Chris, it's not us pretending to have all the answers. Instead, it's us having an honest conversation based on this research and just wanting everyone to have all the information available to them to make the best decisions and not necessarily give up or surrender to what may seem like a overwhelming debt or overwhelming pile of things that you're trying to work through, if that makes sense.
It absolutely makes sense. But let us know what are your thoughts and what things work for you that's very unique that you feel like other people should know or can maybe implement for themselves. You can email us at feesalwayswin@gmail.com. You could leave a post on the Facebook page. We'll probably include a topic in there for people to contribute to going forward. And we appreciate you for joining us. today. Please like us on Facebook, leave a message on iTunes, rate us. That helps us get higher in the rankings. And also, we'll read it on air. We're trying to build a community of like-minded individuals that want to be financially solvent, successful. But good day, good night, have a good week. The opinions expressed on the show do not reflect the thoughts of our respective employers, family, or podcast network. We are not licensed by the FTC or SEC. Before acting on information on the website or from the show, you should consider whether it's suitable for your particular circumstance and seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor.